Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. Rod, in many ways, this is a return engagement for you from my Ask the CIO program. In many ways, this is new for you. So I'll say welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Jason.
So we're going to talk today cybersecurity. Never a topic that we can't fill up and talk lots about. So, but specifically, energy is doing some really interesting things around cybersecurity, and that's why we have you on the show today. So let's start off with one of the most interesting things you guys are doing, the Joint Cyber Coordination Center, the JC3, as it's commonly called. I remember reporting back in 2013 that it had reached initial operating capabilities. Here we are, 2015. Talk a little bit about what the status of the center is today, and how is it different than it was, you know, just a couple years back?
Well, the Joint Cybersecurity Center that we've been putting together here at the Department of Energy, we've actually had this in planning for a number of years. And in fiscal year 14, as you mentioned, in 2013, fiscal year 14, we actually had IOC and brought a lot of things together to put JC3 into place. It's a lot like building a house. You start with the foundation, you start with the framing, you put the drywall on, and then get the amenities into the house. And really what we're doing right now is working on putting those amenities in, getting the trim, if you will, those kinds of things. We're following our program management plan and our scoping document pretty closely. And in fact, one of the things that happened just this year is that the CyberOne program, which encompasses the JC3, has been indicated as a major investment for the Department of Energy. And in our cost schedule performance rating for the dashboard for that particular, for JC3 and in our program for JC3, we have a 5 out of 5 currently for that. So we're actually progressing pretty well in terms of what our plan is and where we plan to go with JC3.
The CyberOne program, is that the overarching plan around JC3, or is that a piece of it?
We've actually developed a working capital fund for those who understand all of the machinations around the financial process. But basically, we get funding from our components within the Department of Energy, and then that funding is then used for the CyberOne program, which encompasses JC3, and all of the things that we want to do with JC3. And again, we've got a scoping document, a program plan. We're very prescriptive about how we want to put the program together. So there's program management, project management, interlaced in throughout the whole program. We do things on milestones. We have projected plans, costing of those plans, and you know, just how we want to progress with the program.
That's fascinating. You guys actually were able to set up a working capital fund. So much of this, when it comes to cyber or really anything else in government, I had a long conversation just recently with the folks at OMB regarding shared services, which we'll get into a little bit, I think, later on, because in many ways, JC3 is a shared service, but how the most important thing is for the shared service providers to have a working capital fund or franchise fund or something to enable them to invest. So I think that's fascinating. Are you able to give me just a little bit more about how you got that set up? Obviously, your acquisition folks played a big role as well.
Well, the JC3 was born in a lot of ways out of an exfiltration that we had in early 2013. And so there was a sense of urgency in putting JC3 together, having the collaboration and the information sharing that JC3 brings to the table. JC3 is not a security operations center in the strictest sense. A security operations center typically has its fingers in the operational aspects of particular components and sites and those kinds of things, monitoring things like firewalls, firewall rules, routers, and those other kinds of security types of things that are more operational in their scope and aspects. But what we're concerned with in JC3 is the collaboration amongst all of our sites for the sharing of information, so that as incidents occur at different sites, we can then share that information, wrap around it maybe some classified information that rounds out the thought process of what's actually going on, and then share that information across the enterprise, basically telling our components that, you know, this is something we're seeing at this particular site. It's possible it may transition to your site. Here are the signatures. Here are the scripts. Here are the different indicators of compromise that we're seeing, and it gives early warning kind of activity for our other components, hopefully then they can put up the defenses and then preclude an exfiltration or an infiltration, if you will, at the other site.
I remember that exfiltration. That was it was a tough time for you guys. Something like 50,000 plus employees were affected, and it was just over, I remember something around a cold fusion patch that was an old system. So it's interesting how something bad can really turn into something good. What is the current status of the JC3? Obviously, are you near FOC full operating capability, or how do you get there?
Well, to say that we're FOC, you know, I really, really hesitate to even talk about a fully operational capability in any sense of JC3, because I see JC3 as a continuous pull and a continuous program that, you know, theoretically may never hit a total and complete FOC as we would think about an FOC for, say, let's say, a weapons program in DOD. We are continually looking at innovative tools, innovative procedures, innovative ways of gaining information so that we can provide that early warning capability to our components. But we are continually working the program, if you will, for JC3 to try to develop a certain maturity level for the way things are today. Now, when you consider that, tomorrow may be a different day. And some of the things that we're seeing tomorrow will drive different technologies, drive different thoughts and processes as how to be resilient in keeping our systems up and keeping them available for our components and for our users. But so I hesitate to say that there's an absolute FOC. We do expect to complete our initial capabilities in terms of a fully operational capability early in fiscal year 16, but we also expect that that's going to be an iterative process beyond that point as well.
Talk a little bit about what capabilities are in there now as much as you can. I realize there may be some sensitivities, but how is the JC3 different today than it was at the initial operating capability in 2013?
We have implemented a number of different improvements and processes. One of the biggest things that we've done is we've invested heavily in some of our advanced analytical capabilities. We brought on a number of team members with some very significant skills that allow us to do forensics, allow us to do analysis of some of the things that we see across the enterprise. In addition to that, we've also are working very closely with many of our labs. In this type of a coordination center, whenever you're thinking about coordination, you're talking about building the relationships that you need to be able to do the job that you need to do. And those relationships with our labs are very, very important. For example, at Los Alamos, we've brought them on board to help us with many of our malware analysis and reverse engineering to be able to take a look at what's happening within our networks. We also have a very close relationship with the National Nuclear Security Administration, or what we call NNSA. And we work very closely with them and their IR out in Las Vegas in things that they're doing out there for the protection cyber-wise. In addition to that, we work extremely closely with the Office of Intelligence and Counterintelligence that we have here at the Department of Energy. We're working with them to stand up what we call a cyber intelligence unit. It's a group of folks and tools that enhances our open source and sensor data with classified information. So basically, we're providing a full package not only of open source kinds of things and things that we're seeing from logging and those kinds of inputs, but we also wrap that around our classified information so that we can reach back to the intelligence community and provide a full analytics package to our components so that if they start seeing some potential infiltrations, we have the reporting process and the communications process to be able to round that all out. So the goal here is to pull all of this resources together in a collaborative way with all of our components and units, provide a classified view as well as an open source view, and then provide to our components that early warning capability. Now, there is also another aspect of what we're doing in JC3 that I think is very important, and that is the work that we're doing with the electrical sector and some of the other sectors out in the public domain. We work with them as well to provide them information as best that we can. The idea, again, is to develop that collaborative relationship with those sites so that we can exchange the information in such a way that it makes it actionable for some of our public domain folks as well.
All right, a lot there to follow up with. Let me go back to the one that really piqued my interest, which is the stand-up of cyber intel unit. Talk a little bit about that a little bit more. What's the timing around that? Is this a new group of people, or is this people who are existing, but they're being maybe shuffled around in a different structure?
Well, I think it's more a case of awareness. The existing folks that we have here within the department, but we've developed a closer relationship with what our intelligence community is doing so that we can get that information. We do have some folks that we are hiring, both contractor and federal employees, within the JC3 as we mature JC3 moving towards that early fiscal year 16, fully operational capability, if you will. And having the awareness of our JC3 people and closely related with through that cyber intelligence unit with the cybersecurity intelligence folks brings a real interesting and collaborative process to what we're trying to do with the rest of our lab.
Is this cyber intel unit already set up, or is it something that's being set up, you know, kind of piece by piece over the next year or so?
Well, that's already set up today, and we are leveraging that in a big way here. I can't talk a whole lot about, you know, what some of the things that we've done in that area because obviously it's classified, but our JC3 is actually in a SCIF, in a secure facility. So the information that they deal with right now includes that classified piece.
And I think what we're seeing from DHS, what we're seeing from the White House around cybersecurity is to bring that intel side in. You see that with some of the information sharing proposals that are out there on Capitol Hill too. How can the government share unclassified and classified data with the vendors, which I want to get back to in a second when we go back to the electric grid part that you mentioned as well. But you guys are already doing that internally, and I think that has so much value people kind of overlook it. I imagine you're already seeing value from that in the short time this has been up.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we take in the feeds from Einstein. We use Einstein. We use EyeSight. We have a dedicated individual over at NCIC, which is the intelligence community, so that we can get, the real-time information and not have to wait for somebody to pick up the phone and call us. We actually have somebody there that's already on site to be able to provide that information. I've found in my days working cybersecurity that it's always beneficial to have somebody on site so that when you start seeing the prairie dogging, you know, people standing up and saying, oh, I'm getting this indicator, I'm seeing this over here, you get that real-time information very quickly that way. And then we have that person on the floor there at NCIC to be able to give us that kind of information. So it's important, I think, to have that classified reach back into it, to classified systems, to be able to get that early warning, early indicators of compromise.
All right, well, that's a good time to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the electric sector. My special guest today is Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. Now, Rod, before break, we were talking about the Joint Cyber Coordination Center. That's really the focus of our conversation today. One of the things you talked about was some of the benefits or some of the things that you're doing through the JC3, which is working more closely with the electric sector. And this is big because I know this administration specifically has really tried to focus on that public-private coordination, collaboration. So talk a little bit about the JC3's interaction with the electric sector.
Well, we've worked very closely with our Office of Electricity here. In fact, the Office of Electricity is right next door to my office. And I work very closely with Pat Hoffman and her group in the sharing of information, providing information, and the planning for the electrical sector. Now, that really finds its way in the Information Sharing and Analysis Center, ISAC, and the electrical sector, ISAC, ESISAC. Is who we work with in providing information and trying to grease the skids, if you will, in providing information to them and giving them the information they need for cybersecurity. The electrical sector has also provided a capability maturity model called C2M2, Cybersecurity Capability Maturity Model, that they have provided to the electrical sector to be able to take a look at what the electrical sector, specific electrical companies, may be doing in cybersecurity and give them a model by which they can assess their maturity in what they're doing in cybersecurity. I think that's a very important tool. It's a self-posed tool. It's not as onerous as you might say as the NIST 853 process might be, but it is a maturity model that an electrical sector entity can take after a course of a couple of days, get an indication of where they may need to apply cybersecurity controls, cybersecurity improvements, to be able to get a better handle on what's going on cybersecurity-wise within their group. So I've found in my time here at the Department of Energy that there are a few things that are more serious than electrical power, the nuclear stockpile that we deal with here at the Department of Energy. So we have some very near-term cybersecurity concerns, and the ability for us then to keep those things safe and secure is really important to us.
Because one of the goals, is, I think, as you mentioned earlier on, is with JC3, is all about collaboration and coordination. So talk about a little bit this information sharing more broadly outside just the electricity sector, but more broadly how this is helping you guys respond to incidents across the department, and how is this analysis and coordination really benefiting the energy department?
It's very important to have the relationships in place to be able to use those relationships to advance a cybersecurity cause within the department. We have a very federated model here, lots of labs, lots of sites, lots of actual facilities that we deal with. Their accomplishment of cybersecurity is done in many different ways. So to have a deep understanding of how that is done within a department, you have to have the relationships within those entities to be able to sit down, talk through the cybersecurity issues and controls that you might want to be dealing with. And that relationship is with those entities is important. Now, what does that mean for somebody like me? When I first got here, I set up a couple of working groups, if you will. One of them is called the Big Five, and those are the Big Five entities here within headquarters that have responsibility for cybersecurity. So Science and Energy has a person at that table. NNSA, the National Nuclear Group, has a person at that table. The environmental management folks, another individual. And then lastly, the PMA, is the Power Marketing Administration folks, has a representative as well. Now, you say, well, that's only four. Well, I'm the fifth. So the five of us meet periodically, regularly, usually on a weekly basis if we can, to sit down and talk about what's going on cybersecurity-wise within the department. And that brings the program element here within the headquarters to make sure that we're all on the same page strategically and tactically to make sure we're moving things forward. Now, I also took the relationship building down a level. Each of our labs, we have 16, 17 labs. Each of those labs has a chief information security officer. So I'm working with leadership from the CIOs as well as the chief information security officers at each of the labs to develop a group within the lab structure to be working on common practices, procedures, those kinds of things within the labs and sharing of information at the lab level. And then we use that that structure and the Big Five structure to put in place the programs and such for JC3. And JC3 is an integral part of that relationship building process.
In many ways, it sounds like you have two governance structures going on here. One at a high level where the programs and the each of the parts of the mission areas of energy comes in. And then one at the next level down, people who maybe are in the operational side. Is that the goal, a strategic governance and an operational governance?
Yes, and I hesitate to use the word governance. It's more of a collaborative approach. I like to use the Big Five. I also like to use the CISOs at the labs to develop requirements and tell me what's working with JC3, what may not be working with JC3, what they would like to see in the future for JC3. And in fact, in my discussions with them, one of the things that they really would like to see is a more of a machine-to-machine communications process so that we take the humans out of the middle, which usually slows down the information flow, and make it more machine-to-machine so that as the indicators of compromise, as the indicators from audit logs and such pop up within JC3 from one component or another, that information is flowed at the speed of light to the other components so that they have time to react to what they're seeing. So it's really a machine-to-machine, very quick response kind of information flow, and that's our goal. I'm not going to tell you that we're there in every case at this point, but we have had some successes in developing machine-to-machine connections that allow us to move that information very quickly.
Interesting. Now, the other piece of this is when you bring in the people from the Big Five, are you bringing in cyber or IT people, or are they mainly, again, you mentioned mission people, but do they have a cyber bent or a IT bent or background?
Well, in this case, the Big Five are the cybersecurity officers for the major programs within headquarters. And from the national lab standpoint, I work with the national lab CIOs at their level, but I also work at the CISO level at the national labs. I find that in the communications process that it is often a good idea to have multiple levels of communications because in my experience over a number of years, the information flow does not always go from top to bottom or bottom to top. And so communicating and providing that communication process in as many venues as you possibly can typically provides benefits.
How are you bringing in the mission side, the business people, if you will? Because cybersecurity, as we've seen over the last, you know, couple, 5, 6, 7 years, is definitely no longer just a CIO or a CISO responsibility. It really does cut across all parts of the community.
No, that's absolutely true. And having the CIO in the, at the executive table from a mission standpoint, as well as representing cybersecurity at the executive table, I think is important. And I've seen that here at the department. The secretary and the deputy secretary are both very much interested in cybersecurity and have included myself as well as the CIO in that decision process, which I think is a fantastic thing. I do try when I visit with the labs to get an audience with the executive director at each of the labs to get their perspective on what's happening within their lab for cybersecurity. And I've been pretty successful in being able to do that. It's important to be able to hear the mission side, and for a lot of our labs, especially the science labs, their mission is to provide leading-edge, cutting-edge scientific research, and that is the primary goal. For me as a cybersecurity practitioner, professional, if you will, I have to look at myself as an enabler. So I don't want to be Dr. No in the cyber world, but I do want to convey that having proper cybersecurity in place actually enables the mission to perform its job and to do it without loss of availability or integrity or even confidentiality, if the case may be. That's the typical CIA acronym for cybersecurity professionals. So I look at myself more as an enabler than I do as a somebody who's there to tell them they can't do something.
All right, very good. Let's take a quick break and talk more about the JC3. My guest today is Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. Now, Rod, before break, we talked a little bit about information sharing, how that is helpful both to the electrical community, but also more broadly across all of the Energy Department and the working groups you've set up. Let me move over to the integration of JC3, because as you said, it's not an operational piece. It's basically a coordination, a collaboration center. Energy Department has sensors. They have other cyber capabilities. We know that. And then you also are integrating back to the Homeland Security Department's US CERT program, among other areas of DHS. Talk about all how all that fits together through JC3.
Well, Jason, we do have a number of sensors. We are not a security operations center, so we do not control operations. I do not want the ability to reach into any component to drive a patch or to drive a setting in a firewall, for example. That's not what I want to be doing. But we do have automated information sharing that we have across our components. We call that our Cyber Fed model, CFM. This is a process that is managed for us by one of our labs, Argonne National Labs. And it is a sharing infrastructure, and it has indicators of compromise, signatures, reports, those kinds of things. By connecting through the nodes at the CFM nodes at the sites, and they're the local defenses that each individual component has, we can automatically update them with lists, signatures, information, and that is basically our communications flow CyberFed model. We also have a program that we called our Cooperative Protection Program, which is a net flow of sensors at all of our DOE locations, and it's kind of like Einstein 1 for DOE. We find that it's an essential part of our scoping for incidents, identifying trends, alerting us to potential malicious activity. We've taken a lot of information off of this program. We've used it as a baseline that then gives us the capability to monitor trends according to a norm. This service is, again, hosted by one of our labs, Pacific Northwest Laboratories, out in Washington State, and they do this for us here at Pacific Northwest for JC3. In addition to that, we're working on maturing that process a little bit that will allow us to do some data visualization, some correlation, some alerting on that data that we have. And again, we've probably got 2.5 years, maybe 3 years worth of data that will allow us to do some anomaly detection through the baseline that we have in our databases. I did mention earlier that we've got an individual at the NCIC who provides us information. We share information with the NCIC, obviously, with US CERT, with all of the other CERTs that we can. In addition to that, it's interesting, I have a very close relationship with a number of other CISOs within the Beltway here, CFOX CISOs. We meet fairly regularly to commiserate and all of that. But through that process, we've also shared information on the different SOC-like, JC3-like activities that each of the agencies have. And in fact, we're going to have a Department of Commerce team come and visit our JC3 here in the next couple of weeks. And the Department of Agriculture with Chris Lowe at the Department of Agriculture, we've had some discussions as well about sharing information. We've also shared information with the Department of State at a low level and also Department of Interior. So the goal here is also to, at some point, pull in all of the other agency SOCs, JC3-like organizations, so that we can also share information agency-wide across the other agencies. That would be one of our goals here off into the future. Our integration activities are pretty deep. We do have a couple of other areas that we do some integration with the DHS and their Cyber Information Sharing and Collaboration Program. That's an automated sharing of threat information with DHS and some industry participants. We were one of the first to be able to do that. Right now, it's a one-way feed from DHS to DOE, but we're looking to have that bi-directional so that we can actually feed the DHS database with kinds of things that we might be seeing as well. So we are always interested in collaborating, not only at the individual level with the Big Five and with the CISOs at the labs, but we're also working with all of the other agencies and other components across the landscape to try to round out our information.
It's fascinating that you are meeting with other agencies. As I think about it, I don't know of any other agency that has a very similar setup as you guys do for the JC3. I think everybody has a security operations center, but I'm not sure anyone has a coordination center. Are you seeing any other agencies with similar sets up like a JC3?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because typically if you have a very federated model like we do here at the Department of Energy, where large geographic dispersion, large differences in what some of the labs do versus other labs, the coordination center makes a lot of sense. There are some agencies, CISOs that I've talked to, that have a rather homogeneous type of functionality. And in that case, their operation centers look more like an operation center than a coordination center. I will tell you that the Department of Commerce is doing a similar kind of JC3. When I was at the Department of Commerce, we put this into the budget, and as I was departing for the Department of Energy, we were putting together a very, very similar type of organization as to what we have here for the JC3. At the Department of Commerce, as you might recollect, it has a very diverse functionality across all of the different components between NIST, NOAA, Census, PTO, from patents to census statistics to ocean data to weather data. It's a very diverse set of information. So a JC3-like organization works pretty well for the Department of Commerce. Department of Agriculture is fairly similar, although they do have some Security Operations Center-like activities, but they also have a very diverse group of components and activities. So I think as you see a more federated model with a diverse set of functionality, you're going to see more of a JC3. Those agencies that have a rather homogeneous functionality, you might tend to see more of a SOC with a consolidation of operations. But for us, a JC3 works very, very well.
It's interesting, when you talk about the different models. I know you came from commerce. It seems that this trend could actually happen more and more across government, because even if you have as you called it, homogeneous functionality, take law enforcement or interior department even, you still are getting feeds from the field. You're still getting feeds from so many different sensors. You almost need somebody to not just take in those feeds, but analyze those feeds. And a lot of times security operations centers, at least in my experience of talking to different, you know, CISOs around the government, are busy enough just trying to defend the network. I mean, is that the real key to something like a JC3 is that analysis and making sure people can understand the data? Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. And in fact, I've been reading some things on the internet lately that talk about developing a Red Cross kind of activity for cybersecurity. I have a little bit different take on that. I would rather have a Center for Disease Control, much like the HHS has down in Atlanta. I mean, we use the same kind of terminology in cybersecurity as we do in healthcare. You know, you talk about cyber hygiene, you talk about viruses, some of the other terminologies that we use in cybersecurity. So having a Center for Disease Control or a Center for Cyber Control, if you will, that has a warning capability, a tracking capability of all of the malware. We have some of those things in place now, but I just don't see it at an enterprise level. And I think that would be of a big benefit here within the federal government if we could do something like that at a high level to control the malware, the disease that infects our cybersecurity organizations. I'm hoping that with the new FISMA model that's coming forward, that maybe we'll see a little bit more of that kind of coordination from DHS, and we'll see how that progresses.
Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can start looking out into the future of the JC3 and other things you guys are doing around cybersecurity. My guest today is Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and my guest today is Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. Now, Rod, before break, we were talking a lot about the setup of the JC3 and how other agencies are starting to follow suit, or at least looking at your model and maybe looking to copy it, which is great. And then we ended with just the part about the idea of a CDC for cyber. Let's talk about the JC3. Let's finish that conversation before we get into some other priorities. Long-term plans, you talked a lot about the short-term changes that are coming between now and the end of, I guess, fiscal 16. Where do you see in the long term the JC3 looking like?
Well, one of the things that we're looking at very closely is innovation in cybersecurity. We have, with the department's energy and NNSA group, they are involved in some longer-term cybersecurity initiatives. Things that we will be seeing in the public domain 5 to 7 years down the road are now being developed at some of our labs. So the idea for us here at JC3 is to gain an innovative focus, if you will, the ability to be able to take some of those innovative technologies and not only within the department, but also out in the public space, venture capital. So I sit on a couple of DHS forums where innovative technologies are presented, and we have the ability to be able to basically get an idea of what may be coming out in the very near future, with the possible ability for us to take that kind of a tool, that kind of an idea, and implement that within the JC3. I've always bemoaned the fact, in many of the panels I've been on and such, that many times in the cybersecurity world, we are lagging to the new technology that makes its way into our public domain. What I mean by that is that security is not always available for the new technology as people start buying it, and we tend to have a lag by a certain period of time. Our idea in looking at innovative technologies is to be able to shorten that time frame between when new technologies appear within the government, within private industry, and then have the ability to provide security tools, security processes, to be able to make sure that those kinds of things are mature. So that's one of the things we're looking at in the JC3 context, is to take a look at those initiatives and hopefully bring some of those into JC3 early on so that we have the ability to use them and get closer to the technology drivers. We're also looking at advanced data analytics. We're looking at potentially improving our sensor suite. We're also always looking for opportunities to collaborate. The interesting thing in the cyber world, which I'm sure you've heard, Jason, is that it really only takes one issue, one exfiltration, one infiltration, if you will, that can ruin the day for the CISO. And so from that perspective, you really have to be diligent in everything you're doing to try to catch that one thing that might ruin your day.
Let me back up on the work you're doing with DHS on some of their forums. Are we talking about science and technology directorate forums? You're talking about something from MPPD around cybersecurity. Can you give me a little more details?
Well, science and technology is one of the forums that we participate in. We also have a forum here within a department that we participate in as well. There is a forum that's, I don't know that it's classified, really shouldn't say too much about it, but it's run through DHS. And those forums kind of give us a view into what may be coming down the road from a cyber protection standpoint.
And they include vendors, meaning the industry, the academics, the researchers, or is it really just from an internal standpoint of the government's work?
It includes all of that.
One of the things when we look into the future is definitely there's a workforce challenge that every agency is facing when it comes to hiring the right people. Talk a little bit about that challenge that you guys are facing at Energy, both in terms of ensuring people have the right skills and people, you know, don't create or take those cyber risks, the insider threat, if you will, because those are, I think, two separate but equal challenges.
I'm a firm believer in having a very rounded out office. And what I mean by that is I do need cyber technical people with deep cyber forensics kinds of expertise. But in addition to that, I really need to have individuals who can write, who can communicate. I need financial managers. I need program management expertise. Because at the end of the day, I can talk about deep technical issues, but if I can't communicate that deep technical issue to my executive suite, either written or orally or in a financial management context, the chances of me being able to move that program forward are probably very low. So I'm very much interested in a very rounded out and a very diverse set of office when it comes to a cybersecurity office. Now, from a technical standpoint, we strive to have those few best technical individuals within JC3. However, we do reach back to the labs. Many of our labs have very deep cyber technology capabilities, and to the extent that we can leverage them, we do. And we found that that has been a very beneficial process for us, because not when we find something and we find that there's an issue at a component at a site, we are able to call in the cyber technology experts from the different labs to provide us with expertise, provide us with tools, provide us with capabilities that may not normally be available at other agencies. So we leverage our labs to a significant extent. Now, from a cyber insider threat process, we are very, very aware of the insider threat, information sharing, information safeguarding, all of those things that have been coming out of the White House for us to take deeper dives into in terms of making sure that controls are in place. We take that very, very seriously because we do have a very large amount of classified information when you think of nuclear weapons and nuclear stockpile that we need to make sure is secure. So we have a wide variety of different highly secure kinds of systems, some that are one-off individual computers, others that are networked computers that are actually standalone. And we are examining each and every one of those to make sure that we have not only the standard security protocols in place, but also that we've hardened them to the greatest extent that we can and protected them from that insider threat. So we have taken that very, very seriously.
How often are you calling upon them? Because, I mean, imagine they could be busy every single day, just in the amount of cybersecurity challenges that everybody has.
Well, typically, if we see an advanced persistent threat or get an indicator or a signature that indicates we've got an advanced persistent threat or something that is new or something that is very technically competent, if you will, that's when we call them in. If there's encryption issues, for example, if we have an encryption algorithm that has been used by a perpetrator, we may use some of the labs to help us to decrypt so that we can indicate, find out what the indicators are and find out what might have been exfiltrated. So we use them on an episodic basis. It's not every day. We try to not cry wolf and use them for the real heavy lifting. But we've found that the expertise that our labs have been very beneficial in helping us come to grips with some of the things that we've seen.
All right, sir, we're almost out of time. There's plenty to talk about. We could probably talk much broader, but just give me a sense, if you will, of some other priorities you're working on over the next 6 or 9 months. You talked a lot about the JC3, but we haven't heard, for instance, around cloud mobility. We haven't heard much about CDM. So just give me a sense of what other is on your list.
Well, CDM is a big thing for us as well. You know, I'm a big proponent of CDM and coming out of DHS. And so we are participating in a big way with CDM, Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation. We do have in place the standard protocols for mobile computing, you know, VDI, two-factor authentication, those kinds of standard processes. There is one other area that we are heavily into, and that is supply chain risk management. We have a lot of computers that we buy every year, a lot of contractors that we hire every year, and so we have a process by which we review those procurements so that we hopefully prevent any kind of supply chain issues that might arise through those procurements. So that is a big area for us. And it has a lot of interest both here within the building and outside the building. So we are taking a round turn on that one as well.
All right. Again, there's a lot more to talk about. Unfortunately, though, we are out of time. My guest today has been Rod Turk, the Energy Department's Associate CIO for Cybersecurity and Chief Information Security Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Rod, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.